the cool cobblers.
You have nothing to fear.
Well, wherever the soul may be.
And latex.
She could have sensed this.
That's right. Is that fucking latex, man? Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Haunt Heads, the podcast that goes bump in the night. I am your host, Janine Mercer, and I am joined here, as always, by...
Katie.
Well, she doesn't want to seem full of herself now, so she's taken the lovely and talented off, which...
Well, like, I'm not super, super depressed this week, so, like, I can just be Katie.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The meds are balanced, so...
You're embracing your skin. That's good.
My what?
Your skin. You're embracing your oneness.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm embracing.
Embracing your skin. Yes. Yay, skin. Well.
It's not one of my favorite Rihanna songs. She has a lot of better ones.
Yay, skin?
No, just skin.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was like, really?
Bad.
I was like, Rihanna has a song called Yay, Skin? I feel like I would know that's a thing, but...
No, it's a sexy song.
Cool.
It's on my sexy song playlist.
It's on your sexy song playlist.
Mm-hmm. How is your tea?
It's quite lovely. I'm enjoying the fact that it's in this piggy mug. It just has a fat pig on it, and it says oink.
I looked at all of the different mugs when I was making your tea, and I was like, what speaks to me today?
And the fat pig mug. Nice. All right. That's good. That's good.
So how has your last bit of time since last we were here been?
Pretty good. I have been doing a lot of training at work, so it's been kind of crazy on that front. And the MFA has been kind of crazy on that front. So trying to maintain my sanity.
Maintain your brain.
Maintain my brain. Yeah. I had the refrigerator crap out, and luckily today was garbage day. So, like, everything in the refrigerator had to go. It sucked.
Yeah, well, condiments aren't cheap to, like, replace all of them.
No, they're really not. And unless it has a lot of vinegar in it, it's not going to make it.
No.
Like, the salad dressings and shit?
No.
Uh-uh.
Ooh, when I was vegan, I tried to get a vegan ranch. Oh, God, no.
Oh.
Oh, no. Oh.
Vegan ranch?
Yeah, it was awful. It tasted like butthole.
I mean, okay. Putting aside the fact that you just said it tasted like butthole, because how would you know? I don't really understand why anybody would buy vegan ranch dressing. I just feel like if you're going to be vegan, then you shouldn't try to buy anything that has, like, milk-like qualities.
Some
or, like, dairy-like qualities.
Like, yogurt you can get away with if you get coconut milk yogurt. That's actually better than regular yogurt, in my opinion.
Hmm.
And ice cream. But it's not, like, more of the sweet things you can get away with. Savory? It just tastes awful, man.
Oh.
Unless, there's some brands of fake cheese that aren't super bad, but they gave me a migraine. So I just had to live in a life without cheese until I was like, God fucking damn it, I'm from Wisconsin, I want my goddamn fucking cheese. And that's when I became vegetarian again.
So... Like, I know that there's a whole market for veganism or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like that people who try to be vegetarian and try to be vegan do more harm to the animals that they're trying to protect than they would if they just didn't do it.
It depends on the way in which you do it, but I don't know. That's a long conversation. Mm.
Hey, this is a long conversation, and not why we're here.
Yes, I was just like, because I could get started, but then I wouldn't stop, and then we wouldn't hear about the Los Feliz LA murder house.
Right, and there would just be constant scraping from a soapbox. Who the fuck wants to listen to that for 2 hours?
Me. I mean, listen to myself, like, wax poetic about being a vegetarian for 2 hours. I wouldn't have a problem
with
that.
I'm assuming that this episode is not going to be 2 hours, but we both have 9 pages.
Yeah,
so.
Mine printed weird.
Yeah, it did print weird. I don't know. I think it's a Google Docs issue, personally, but whatevs. Whatevskis.
Yeah.
So I think that we should maybe start with some updates on what we're going to do coming up in the not-too-distant future.
What are we going to do coming up in the not-too-distant future?
I'll tell you. So we are going to do another mini-sode. Featuring stories from our friends on Reddit.
Fun.
And I have already started collecting and curating some of these stories.
Ooh, do I get to read some in a dramatic voice?
You get to read some in a dramatic voice. Well, not too dramatic. I mean, don't be...
Well, no, I'm not going to...
Because it's somebody's experience, but...
I won't, ridicule them. Fun. I'm excited.
Yep, so that's coming down the pipe. And then what's going on with Instagram? Have we gotten any more people?
Here, I'll check right now and let you know.
Okay.
Because I definitely have been keeping up on the Instagram. I definitely have been checking it on a regular basis.
I hope you have. It's the only thing you have to do. You had one job.
No, we still just have 13 followers.
Oh, the last time you said we had 7. And one of them was you.
Hey, man, I was real depressed. I'm not accountable for what I do.
It's fine. Because lucky number 13.
Yes.
So good.
We have 13 followers.
Well, technically we have 12 because one of them is you.
I count.
But anyway. So yeah, that's... I think that's news.
Yes.
Right? There's nothing
else. I don't think there's anything else.
No. We're good.
I'm good.
All right.
Yeah.
You asked me how my shit was.
Yeah.
How was your shit?
My shit. Oh, well,
I mean, aside from the adjustment and you're feeling much better now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No. Well, my pank isn't being a hoe right now.
Cool.
So that makes me very happy. I've been painting again.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So that's been fun. Work's been good.
Cool.
I'm fine.
Yeah.
Ooh, I went to the art museum.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Oh, it was beautiful. I cried.
What did you go and see?
Everything.
The special exhibit or just...
Oh, no. I was there for 2 hours. I went everywhere.
Okay. Nice.
I saw everything.
Nice.
I like the modern and contemporary pieces the best.
Mm.
They just speak to my heart. And I'm just like...
Yeah. They had a... I think it was a photography exhibit by... The lady who helps to do Ear Hustle, she had a bunch of her work at the Milwaukee Art Museum, and I really wanted to go, but my schedule didn't allow.
There was a contest, and there was a whole gallery of student artwork, which actually was super awesome, from people in high school.
Nice.
I actually spent a lot of time at, because I was like, then you look at all this artwork that people are making when they're, 15 years old, and then I think of the things that I'm painting, and I'm like, oh, yeah, woo.
Yeah.
But well, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also really love that Quadracci pavilion.
Lohan.
It's very pretty. The bird that opens.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
See, that's what I know it as.
Yeah, it was built by Oil Gear.
Oh.
Which is the company that Joanne's grandfather used to work for. My wife's grandfather. Yeah. So.
Yeah,
all right. So fun. That is news.
Yes.
Yay, news. Woo. All right. So I think that we decided that I went first last time and now it's your turn.
I believe so.
Okay. So this week I have Rabe Robinson, The Man Without a Face. And he's actually the reason for the Green Man urban legend.
Ooh.
So I kind of melded urban legend with real life this week.
When I think of the Green Man, I just think of the Green Man in Wicca. And I doubt, since that's from,
Yeah, no. No, they're not.
Time, I don't think that he's probably involved in that particular.
Yeah, no. No, no.
No.
Not that Green Man.
Yeah, I went a new direction for me, which is more true crime this week. So I'm going to be talking about one of the LA murder houses.
Yeah, we had a whole conversation before about how there can never be just one.
Yes.
It's like potato chips. You can never eat just one.
No.
Well,
California. Everyone's guns to die.
Right. Either by natural disaster or
murder
most foul.
Yeah, so I was looking and just trying to think about what I wanted to talk about this week, and I was, looking at different urban legends of Wisconsin, which is getting kind of, my thing.
Right.
And I was like, you know what? No! I am going to mix it up, and I'm going to talk about death and destruction. And,
cool.
You know, just nice change of pace.
Yeah.
So, I found, like...
Entirely lighthearted.
Yeah. So, I found three really good articles, which is what a lot of this is based on. And one of them I'm going to be quoting from, which is... it was really good. It's actually from the LA Weekly, and it was from 2017, so it's pretty recent, which is just like the story of the Los Feliz murder mansion and its paranormal aftermath.
Nice.
Dun, 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 dun.
I love me some true crime.
Okay. So, there was this house, and it was nestled in the hills of Griffith Park, and at 2475 Glendower Place.
Hmm.
It's beautiful on the outside. If mm-hmm. you look at it, it's like fit for a movie star. It is just this grand, beautiful house, but then something dark lurks within.
Right.
But the property's potential was cut short in December of 1959 when Dr. Harold Pearlson brutally murdered his wife and attempted to kill his children before taking his own life.
Oh.
Yeah. So
well.
He just... kind of went crazy.
He snapped.
And even since that, like, night, even with new owners, the mansion has, like, been empty and the family's belongings have remained untouched because multiple people have owned it since then, but no one fucks with it, basically.
Right. This story sounds familiar. I feel like I read about this on, like...
I was going to say, but you better not say that a podcast was on it, because I looked through all the old podcasts.
No. It wasn't this podcast. I feel like I read about it on, like, Thought Catalog or something, what's the other one? Thrillist, or... There's a few of them that deal with, like, creepy, weird stuff, and I have them all saved.
Yeah.
So they show up on my Facebook. Yeah, I feel like it's familiar.
But yeah, so it is literally just like a time capsule of the Los Feliz murder-suicide in like just like this quiet residential neighborhood. And for decades, like ghost hunters and neighbors have like tried to, like they look through the windows and like tried to get more of a feel for it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, let's get into some history of it.
Cool.
So Dr. Harold Pearlson was, and it's spelled P-E-R-E-L-S-O-N, so Pearlson.
Perlison?
Perlison?
Perlison? Weird. Whatever.
Dr. P.
Dr. P.
Yeah.
Woot woot.
He was a surgeon who specialized in cardiothoracics and allergies. And he actually had gained a successful and really profitable patent for a new type of syringe. And he wrote one of the most respectful clinical reports of the time. The electrocardiogram in familial periodic paralysis. Which was actually featured in, like, the American Heart Journal in June 1949. And he... So I'm just basically telling you why it doesn't seem like he would, like, go the fuck off and murder his whole family. Well, technically, he only tried to murder his children. He only successfully murdered his wife.
Well, I mean, but, attempted schmurder, right?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
That doesn't count.
Whatever.
There was no follow-through.
Right? There you go.
But yes, he was a well-respected keynote speaker and an assistant head of cardiology for the School of Medicine at USC, and was on like the surgical team of cardiology at Los Angeles County General. So he basically his life seemed like a storybook like thing. He had a beautiful wife. He had like his three kids. He was successful. So why the fuck did he kill his whole damn?
I mean, it seems like he was a well-respected. Surgeon.
He was.
Yeah.
He did run into a little bit of problem with, like, his patent. The person that put the patent in, and I forgot to write down the person's name, but we'll just call him Jim. Jimbo. good old Jim.
Jim.
Did take advantage of his lack of knowledge of patent laws and get a lot of the money from it.
Yeah. I mean, Jimbo. That's enough to make anybody snap.
I mean, yeah, but hopefully not kill your wife and attempt to murder your children and then off yourself.
Right.
I think that's a bit
much. I mean, degrees.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's degrees of anger.
There's degrees.
So, this is what happened. The night is December 6th, 1959. Harold came home from work, greeted his wife and kids, made himself a drink, and watched his wife wrap Christmas presents while she waited for dinner to be ready. Now, they were actually Jewish, but they had begun celebrating Christmas with their, like, friends and coworkers, you know, just, it's like an American thing. So,
dude, how fucking awesome was that for the youngsters to get to celebrate
Hanukkah.
Celebrate Hanukkah and Christmas?
Yeah.
They were like, woohoo!
Until this year.
Well.
Until 1959, they probably had a fun time with it.
Well, I mean, degrees. Yeah.
His wife, Lillian, was a wonderful mother and homemaker, and she just, like, called the family together for dinner at the table, and they just talked about their week at school and work, and their daughter, Judy, talked about her friends and the boys she liked.
Mm.
So it was just, you know, like, perfect painting of a family.
Yeah. And, you know, so important, too, to gather the family around the table for dinner. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Makes for good kids to do that.
Yeah.
It does.
It's nice.
Yeah.
I tried to do that, like, with my sisters to make sure we had, like, meals together. It does bring that sense of bonding.
A sense of family and home.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then murder.
Well, thankfully I did not try to murder my sisters. Maybe I would have if my patent had been, like,
well, I mean, you would have been pissed about that patent.
But, okay, so after dinner, like, they watched TV, and then Lillian and Harold tucked in their 11-year-old daughter, Debbie, and their 13-year-old son, Joseph. Judy went into, which is their older daughter, who was 18, she, like, went into her room to work on some homework, and her mom went to the master bedroom to read. And Harold just, like, stayed downstairs drinking, and then he went upstairs to read his copy of Dante's Divine Comedy until he fell asleep. So you're like, oh, okay.
Then some light reading.
Yeah. And then they woke up the next day and moved forward, and everything was fine and beautiful.
Uh-huh.
And they, no.
Yeah, no.
No. So no one really knows what happened in this interim space to where he just went off.
Well.
But sometime around 5 a.m., he woke up. He put the book he had been reading on the nightstand. He went down to the kitchen, where he kept a small tool chest. He retrieved a ball-peen hammer and casually walked back up to his bedroom, where he approached the bed where his wife was sleeping soundly. He stood gazing down at her for a minute and then raised the hammer. And in one swift motion, he brought the hammer crashing down on Lillian's head, and then again and again until it was a bloody mess. You know, as one does.
I mean, what else are you going to do when the rest of the family goes to bed and you're just up with this copy of Dante's Divine Comedy? Just consuming it.
Yeah, so then he left the room and walked into his daughter Judy's bedroom, and he began to attack her with the hammer. Judy, like, woke up by the sound of her mom being fucking murdered.
Bludgeoned to death, yeah.
Yeah, and that is probably what saved her life.
Wow.
As the hammer came down toward her skull, she got her arm up, which softened the initial blow. It still, like, connected with her head, and it, like, made her disoriented, but she tried to get up and, like, run away from her father.
Hmm.
And when she first saw him start to swing the hammer, she let out, like, this scream, which you would do!
I mean, I suppose.
This not only woke up the neighbors, but her siblings, who were asleep as well.
Hmm.
Dr. P heard his youngest daughter emerging from her bedroom, and he thought that his oldest was incapacitated, so he just casually left the room to go see his youngest child. He walked her back to her room and told her, "Go to bed, baby. This is just a nightmare." And then went back to Judy's bedroom. Like,
I mean, it all seems like he finished his drink, and he finished the part of his book, or the book that he was reading, and he was like, what am I going to do now?
Ah.
I know!
Yes.
Wow. What a nutter.
He was just like, go back to bed, darling. This is just a nightmare. And, like, just, like, brought her back to bed. And then he went back to Judy's bedroom.
Hmm.
But while he had been busy with his other daughter, Judy had, like, regained some of her senses, and she, like, left the house. She, like, got the fuck out of Dodge.
Sure. Yeah.
And went to, like, the neighbors who were already awake from her screaming, and, like, they came to the door and called for an ambulance and sent, like, it notified the police.
Right.
So Debbie, who had not believed her dad, like, when he was like, this is all a dream, she was like, uh-huh, I think the fuck not. Except she probably didn't say that because she was 11.
So, I mean, maybe she did.
Extreme stress, it's possible.
Maybe she did.
She got her brother, and they fled from the house before he could use the hammer on them as well. So the doctor realized that the police would be on the way to his house. He went back upstairs, got a bottle of pills from the medicine cabinet, sat down, took all the pills in a single gulp. And, like, the internet tries to say that, like, he drank a glass of acid to kill himself, but that's just the internet being the internet.
Right.
But, yeah, he overdosed on pills. So the police arrived, and they went to speak with the neighbors and the children to make sure they were okay. Judy was sent by ambulance to the hospital with a fracture to her skull and severe bruising, but she did survive with no lingering physical injuries.
Wow.
Yes. The officers approached the door of the house, and a neighbor informed them that he had been knocking, but had gotten no response from anyone inside. They, like, carefully entered, and just, like, they called out to Dr. P, but, like, heard nothing.
Right.
So they went upstairs and found him lying on the floor in his bedroom, the ball peen hammer in his hand, and an empty pill bottle next to him.
Hmm.
His wife was in the bed, her head fractured so badly that she was unrecognizable. Blood was splattered all over the walls behind her, and the bed linens were soaked.
Wow.
And on the nightstand next to Harold's side of the bed, the book by Dante he had been reading, like, was still open, and it read, "Midway upon the journey of our life, I found myself within a forest arc, and for the straightforward pathway had been lost." So maybe just read that and then, like, took a little nap and woke up and was like, yep, time to murder.
Wow.
Murder time. But it was a pretty straightforward investigation, given, like, all of the witnesses that everyone had. It was, like, obvious by the scene of the crime and, like, the statements of the children that Dr. P had murdered his wife, attempted to murder his daughter, and then killed himself. But at first they're like, why? Why the fuck did you do this? And, like, all the neighbors were saying how, like, they were such a loving family and, like, there was no, like, outward signs of any strife. They were seen as a really loving family by everyone around them. But when the police were looking through Judy's car, they did find a letter that she had written to her aunt that said, "We are on the merry-go-round again. Same problems, same worries, only tenfold. My parents are in a bind financially." And the letter said that she would be looking for a job to help the family through, like, the financial crisis. So they believed that he finally snapped under the pressures of his finances and decided that the death of his family was preferable to living, like, in poverty. I mean, very reasonable.
Yeah.
Like, I could murder everyone.
I mean,
or my wife could also get a job and we could support our family that way.
What year is this?
1959.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so.
I mean, I feel like in 59, maybe there were some people who were getting to be a little bit more progressive with, like, women going to work and whatever, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was probably an embarrassing situation for him to think of, you know, his wife having to go and bring in money.
Yeah, well, and then you think, like, of the patent thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just.
Insult to injury.
Yeah. So.
Hmm.
Like, some people believe, yeah, that just, like, the pressures, that's what made him snap. And given that, like, after he killed his wife, he then went on to try and murder his oldest daughter, a lot of people think that he probably would have attempted to kill his younger children then as well. But, of course, since he killed himself, we'll never really know
what
the fuck he was thinking.
And this account of, like, him going upstairs with the hammer and hitting her and then going in and hitting, I mean, a lot of that, too, is probably just speculation as to what really happened. I would be interested to know what happened to the children and if the children... Okay, so that's later?
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll get there. We'll talk a little bit more about them in a while. Well, basically, they were fine and they kind of disappeared into the ether, so people think that they got their names changed so that they could just live somewhat normal lives after that.
I mean, I would change my fucking name.
Yeah. But, yeah, so eventually the press and the news all died down about the event, and the mansion was sold at auction. And the proceeds, like, went to settle the debts, and then the remainder went to the children. The couple who purchased the home, Julian and Emily Enriquez, they only visited it on rare occasions, and they used it just to store things that they didn't want in their house. So they just...
I do remember this story. Yeah.
Yeah. Over the years, they would visit the house to bring something new into the storage site or remove an item. They were never, like, friendly with the neighbors or rude. They just kind of existed.
They just, well, yeah, I mean, and, like, wouldn't it just be cheaper to buy a pod?
Yeah.
Or, well, I mean, I guess pods probably weren't invented yet. But, I mean, there's storing them in, like, a friend's garage. Hey, yeah. Can we put shit in your... No, we're just going to build a house.
Can we buy a murder house and use it to store things?
I mean, that's disposable income right there.
Yep.
We don't have enough room in the basement for all of our shite. What are we going
to
do with it?
Maybe they felt bad for the kids, though. Oh, so, like, they bought it to, like, help with the debts and then help the kids out. And then we're like, what the fuck are we going to do with it? There's bad juju everywhere here.
Right.
And, like, I don't know, we'll keep Aunt Ethel's, like, old dishes over in the corner and leave the rest alone.
They probably walked in there and they were like, do you want to sleep here? And he was like, no. Do you want to sleep here? Hell no. And okay, so we're going to store
dishes.
Right. Yeah. I know a great place to store our filing cabinet. With all of our tax information, and we'll only visit it in the daytime.
Yes. And only during tax season once a year.
Oh my god.
But yes, so they died in 1944, and ownership passed on to their son, Rudy. So people are like, hey, it's got a new owner, he's gonna like fix the place up. No. He did the exact same thing that his parents had done.
Oh my god.
He just used it like for storage. And the neighbors complained because the house was being used as a squatter's hangout. Like, because it was just in such poor repair. Because yeah. Judy was like, hey, well, it worked for my parents, so let's just keep a good thing going.
Right.
Like,
well, and that house was probably still full of all of the stuff that his parents had kept in it.
Yes.
And then he just inherited it.
And yeah,
was
and
like,
Dr. P's family.
The
all their stuff was
oh,
still,
wow.
Yeah, a
Jesus.
Lot of their stuff was still there as well. But yes. Neighbors were complaining about it being used as a squatter's hangout or, like, saying how sex workers would come in and use the house, like, for sex work purposes.
For those things, yes.
For what one does in that field.
In that field of, yes.
Yes. Yep. So it began to decline. Like, the neighbors, like, started to clean up the outside yard and, like, keep it trying to look a little tidy because this is a very well-to-do area.
Right.
And, like, it's already a fucking murder house. That's gonna stay. Like, you're never gonna be able to get rid of that. Like, the worst, like,
right.
The least you can do is, like, a little bit of landscaping. Like, and keeping the hedges trimmed.
I mean, that's really all you can do. There's nothing... I mean, you can put a fresh coat of paint on it all you want.
Yeah.
You know, you can't dress up something like that.
Yeah. But, and, like, even though Rudy had... He put in an alarm system eventually, because people just were bothering him so much, like,
right.
To alert the police if anyone entered the house. The backyard was being used as a homeless camp.
Oh,
and
God.
Then there was a lot of ghost hunters that would come in because...
Well.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, empty houses, like, normally, you know, become haunted.
Right.
Especially, like, if, like, a horrible murder has happened there.
Mm-hmm.
So... The Los Feliz Murder Mansion, as it is called, isn't any different. This house was actually considered haunted pretty much right off the bat, like
oh,
after
sure.
they died, which
yeah.
I think is fair.
I mean, I think that's entirely fair to think that it's haunted by something. I mean,
yeah.
all that negative juju.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. In 2009, the LA Times wrote a story about the house and the mystery surrounded it. Rudy... he was like, no, it's not haunted. I mean, I don't ever go there. It's in complete disrepair. I use it to store things. But haunted? Nah, bro. Nah.
Right.
So, paranormal groups, obviously, would investigate. Many of them spoke of, like, hearing voices and whispers while roaming the outside of the house.
Right.
Others, like, have sworn that they felt the presence of, like, extreme evil permeating the very walls. Orbs are one of the things, like, that people claim, but I wasn't able to find a lot of, like, pictures of them. Because orbs...
And, I mean, if you think about it, if you have a house that's dilapidated, that is filled with shit, it's probably gonna be a little dusty.
Yeah.
And you throw that one curtain aside, and all of a sudden there's orbs everywhere! Like, no, it's fucking dust particles, dude.
Yeah. But the most, like, reported events coming from, like, the ghost hunters are, like, sightings of faces that stare out the windows.
Oh.
Like, they think that his wife, like, they'll see her just, like, kind of, like, look out the window. But then, like, kind of back away. Like, she does not like the camera. And many people photographed the apparition. But when they got home and downloaded the photos on their computers or got the film developed, she wasn't there. So, like, they'd try to take a picture of her. But then she wouldn't actually be in the picture. But, yeah, so Judy, Debbie, and Joseph survived, like, their father's insanity. And they, like, they were sent east to live with relatives, and then they just vanished. So, like, people believe that their names were changed in an attempt to protect them from the notoriety. And it looks like it worked. Because no one truly knows where they are now.
Wow.
So, people don't really know why Dr. P committed the crime. But one thing that I found, wait, let me find it. Dr. P, he had episodes, his wife would say, that, like, he put off as, like, he was having, like, cardiac issues, but in actuality, he apparently did have at least two previous suicide attempts, and his wife was, like, and this is something that you can't find, like, gobs of support for, but it looks like his wife might have been, like, starting to consider getting him committed. So some people believe that could have been what triggered this.
Yeah.
But he did try and, like, off himself a couple times. But the house is still there. Rudy died in 2015, and it was bought by Lisa Bloom and her husband for $2.280 million in 2016. And now it is currently being renovated.
And
hopefully exercised.
Right.
Of any negative
thing. Wow, so they're going to live there.
Apparently.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
All right.
That is.
Unless they're going to turn it into, like, apartments. They're renovating it so that they can turn it into apartments.
Yeah.
And make money off it.
Yeah, there was a couple really cool, well, not cool, but there was, like, some urban-y legend things around it. Like, people said that if you looked in the window, you could still see, like, the Christmas tree and, like, the presents in the living room.
Yeah.
And then there was another story that, like, a family was squatting there and they left, like, a year later on the eve of the, like, anniversary and stuff like that. But I couldn't find a lot of support for those. But
see,
I thought they deserved a mention, but not, like, a focus.
That smacks of Amityville Horror to me. The anniversary of the, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we're going back to the house. People are going to move into the house now, and it's the anniversary of the murders and
So, yeah, I found that interesting and sad.
Yeah.
I just feel so bad for those kids, like.
Yeah.
Damn son and daughter. Yeah. Another daughter.
Well, and also, I think it needs to be said that if there's anybody out there who is contemplating suicide or has attempted suicide, please know that we love you and we don't want you to do anything to hurt yourself.
Oh, definitely not.
And if you do need help, make sure that you reach out, because there are lots of people out there who also care about you who don't want you to do any harm to yourself. So, I didn't mean to go a little dark there, but...
No, I think it's very valid.
I think mental health is important. And it often just gets swept under the rug, like, you know, whatever, but...
Like, I'm a suicide attempt survivor, so, like, bro.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
If you just reach out, talk to people if you need to, and don't murder your wife with a ball-peen hammer.
Yeah, no. No, don't do that. Don't do that.
Yeah. Eesh.
Creepy.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Wow.
True crime.
True crime.
I need another of your candies.
I mean, I do love me some true crime. Like, every single podcast I have on my list is true crime.
I might do more true crime in the future. I found that very fun to research. I was like, ooh.
in the past, I've done Ted Bundy's house and how it was haunted. So, yeah, I mean, if there's a link to a haunting.
Like this one.
Mm-hmm. Or creepy occurrences or whatever. I kind of wanted to start my piece this week by showing Katie a photograph of the gentleman that we're talking about. Ray Robinson, the man without a face. He was around 9 years old when he was in an accident that changed his entire life.
Aww.
And so I'm going to tell you all about it.
Please Aaron. Don't.
On a quiet, bright August day in 1919, 9-year-old Ray Robinson, his sister, and a group of friends were walking along the roadside in Newcastle, Pennsylvania, in search of excitement, or simply something to pass the time. I'm sure that the rocks that they were playing with were getting tiresome. I'm sure that the stick and the wheel, the rim, or whatever that they were chasing down the fucking road.
Those are actually really fun.
Okay.
I've used them.
But I mean, I'm sure after a while, if that's the only thing you have to play with, you're like, wow, fuck, please, can we do something else?
Yes.
So yeah, they got bored with their marbles and shit like that, and they were like looking for other shit to do.
Playing jacks down at the corner.
Playing jacks at the corner. The group walked until something caught their eye. A bird's nest perched high in a tree next to an old trolley trestle. Ray was the adventurous type, so he decided that he was going to climb the trestle so that he could get a closer look. But in his effort to scale the tree and avoid falling and busting a shit, he reached for a wire that once powered the trolley.
Oh, shit.
And sadly, the wire was still active.
Oh, no.
And Ray was electrocuted.
Oh, I've heard that hurts like a bitch.
Yeah. And also, in the recent past, about a year prior to that incident, another boy had died from touching the wire after spending 2 weeks in hospital. So that happened, and then they did nothing about it. They just left it there.
What the fuck?
And then Ray came and grabbed hold of it. So, Ray's face was terribly disfigured. His nose and eyes were destroyed. His arms were maimed, and he lost one hand completely.
Aww.
He endured tremendous suffering, and he was considered a medical marvel by his doctors and nurses, who worked to keep him comfortable during his recovery. Now, unfortunately, in the 1900s, it was customary to hide the quote-unquote shame of a disfigured child, so Ray left the hospital, and he wound up isolated in a room in his family home. Many Victorian homes during that time period featured rooms with drains and plumbing in them,
yeah.
So it was easy enough to keep Ray away from the public eye. I think it's important to note here that he wasn't mistreated at all.
Mm-hmm.
His family never mistreated him, but his family did eat separately from him, and he was hidden away, essentially, from the world.
That in and of itself is not...
I mean, psychologically, yeah. That's psychologically affecting. You went through this horrible accident, you're horribly disfigured, and now you're being locked away in a room.
As though it were your fault.
As like, though, yeah, yeah.
You are to blame.
Even though it was kind of a bad break, Ray tried to make the best of his situation, and he would listen to baseball games on his radio. He was a huge baseball fan, so he'd always try to tune in for the games. He also learned Braille while he was in this solitary, yeah. He learned to make wallets, belts, and doormats out of old tires, so he would sell those. As a young adult, Ray moved from the main house into a small apartment that his family created for him in the garage, and it wasn't long before he began to crave his freedom.
Yeah.
I don't know how long it would take me to crave freedom, probably like a half hour,
yeah.
And I would be like, you know what, I'm done with this shit, can we go outside now? It's about this time that Ray began walking the highways alone at night, and an urban legend was born, which is where it gets interesting. On many a quiet night on a stretch of State Route 351 in Coppell, Pennsylvania, Ray Robinson could be found tapping along the roadside with his cane. Locals would even make a point to drive the road that he was most seen on in order to catch a glimpse of this walking urban legend. For the most part, Ray hid from his neighbors and those who were looking to gawk.
Yeah.
But he would sometimes exchange a conversation for a photo.
Mm-hmm.
He'd exchange, you know, some time spent with people on the outside for, you know, beer or cigarettes. And he got to have those interactions.
Yeah, which I'm sure he craved.
Yeah, so he wasn't so lonely. Ray met many people on the road. Some were simply curious, and others were heartlessly cruel, but he was undeterred. He was even struck by cars on more than one occasion, but Ray would still take his nightly walks until he retired to Beaver County Geriatric Center, and he died there in 1985 at the age of 74. Yeah, some of these people were so cruel, they would
they would give him bottles of beer that they had filled with urine. And they would say, oh yeah, I just opened it. And they would give it to him, knowing that he had no sense of smell. He had very little sense of taste.
He couldn't see.
Yeah, so they would do that. People would also attack him and beat him up. Hell is other people.
That angers me.
Yeah, they were terrible. Now, apparently later on, those people who did that to him felt really bad about it and realized that they had done something horrible.
Oh, good for them.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. I was like, really? Okay, yeah, that's good. Woo. That's good. I'm glad that you realized you were an asshole now that the poor man is dead. Way to go. Ray Robinson was a man who lived and died in Pennsylvania, who was the victim of a terrible accident and a set of circumstances that forever changed his life. He was not a glowing mutant. So,
yes.
Stay with me here.
Okay.
Just stay with me.
I would agree at this point with that statement.
It's quite fascinating to think that Ray is the reason that this urban legend exists, but nevertheless it does. On the outskirts of Pittsburgh, there sits a derelict railroad tunnel. It's covered in graffiti and filled with road salt, but this is where visitors claim to see the Green Man. It's called the Green Man Tunnel, and it's said that teens who drive their cars into the tunnel, turn off their lights, and call out to the Green Man will be rewarded
yeah, what the fuck?
With a visit from the creature. Supposedly, his skin is tinged green from an electrical accident. If he comes close enough to touch your car, his electrical charge will either stall the engine or make the car difficult to restart.
Yeah, so let's go fucking let's go try it. Let's
do it.
It's for fun. Road trip.
It's for funsies. Yeah, it's funsies. I guess, I mean, what else is there to do? I don't know. Maybe there's nothing else to do. I don't know.
I mean, I used to just go hang out at Walmart, so.
I mean, yeah. So.
Can't really judge.
There you go, yeah.
I mean, I still do judge, though. I'd rather hang out
I can't really judge, but I will. If pressed, I will. I will judge. The Green Man is also sighted in Youngstown, Ohio, in a rural spot called Zombieland. There, the horribly disfigured Green Man, said to have been electrocuted by a lightning strike, or in an electrical accident, or turned radioactive while working at the power plant, depending on who you ask, wanders the roads at night with his glowing green skin. He chases anyone he comes across, and teenagers still drive out to the area at night, hoping to catch a glimpse of him. Now, these accounts should be absolutely taken with a big motherfucking grain of salt. Like salt lick sized salt. And I have no idea where the green skin came from. Perhaps Ray's affinity for a particular green plaid shirt and other green clothing that he wore reflected off his skin as motorists cast their lights on him. Apparently he was quite pale because he never went outside in the daytime. So that could have been a reason for that.
I'm still really mad about them giving him pee and stuff.
I mean,
I don't think it's going to be well from over
there. People are dicks. People are just dicks. Don't be a dick.
That's the takeaway for this episode.
Don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick.
Don't kill your family with a ball peen hammer. Don't attempt to kill your children with a ball peen hammer. And don't give people who are blind or disabled beer bottles full of pee.
Just don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick. All right.
It's okay if you have one. Just don't be one.
Yes, don't be one. Just because you have one doesn't mean that it's okay to wave it around in everybody's face.
Yeah, also don't do that. Anyhow.
All right.
Okay.
It's been said that Ray's nose, or what was left of it, would often become infected and turn green because, I mean, it was just an open...
That makes me so sad.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe that's where the name came from. I don't know. Yeah. It's... He was...
I want to give him a hug.
He was in pretty hideous circumstances.
He just deserves happiness and love and kind things.
He does. He did. Yeah. The next section of my story here includes an article. So this article is from the Old Post Gazette, and it's called Green Man's Legend Continues to Glow.
Quote, Pat Temple, now 58, and a printer who works the overnight shift at the Post-Gazette, said that the Green Man made such an indelible impression on him that he's written a story to keep it alive for his grandkids. His tale goes back to 1956 when he and Ray Griffin were 16-year-old Lawrenceville pals. And Ray Griffin is a friend of his.
Yes.
We're not talking about the Green Man, supposedly is Ray Robinson.
Yes.
So, yeah, not this to be confused.
Ray the Second.
Yes, Ray other the Second. Ray. Other Ray. The other Ray.
Yeah. Yeah.
On an evening in June, he writes, Ray and I were hanging out with two other friends, and as we had nothing better to do, see, they had nothing to do.
No, they didn't have a Walmart.
They didn't have a fucking Walmart. Ray suggested that we go up and see the Green Man, and this was an offer I couldn't refuse.
Well, he could have.
I mean, he could have, but he didn't.
Yeah. Just putting it out there. You could have been like, nah, bro.
Yeah, but no, he decided to go.
Okay.
So they pile into Temple's 51 Ford, and they head north for the turnpike, which they took to Route 18, and then followed that to the light in Coppell, turning left on Route 351.
Groovy.
As soon as we started up the road, his story continues, Ray announced that this is the road the Green Man always walked on. There was a long silence, and I could feel the goosebumps. And when we finally did say something, we seemed to be whispering. Perhaps inevitably, Temple recalls, it was a bit foggy, and the visibility was not real good at times. As they came around the bend, Ray yelled, "There he is!" And the car lights shined directly on the Green Man. Temple, who was driving, describes nervously hitting on the brakes, then the gas, then the brakes, while chattering in his similarly freaking friends. They turned around and passed the Green Man once more, but were too terrified to stop. Still, their exploit was impressive enough that older boys actually spoke to them about it. We were still the same jerks that we were before, but now we were minor celebrities. That summer, Temple returned many times, sometimes with those buddies, sometimes with others. In fact, he recalls traffic jams caused by cruisers who actually stopped to talk with the Green Man. The first time that Temple did that, he got a parking ticket. He came to believe that the local police used the Green Man to make the township a few extra dollars. Later, after asking the Green Man if he could, Temple snapped some color photographs of him, that's one of the photographs that I showed you. I believe the background has been imposed on that. I don't think that's the actual background, but I'm not sure. It's a photo of Ray in the foreground.
Yeah.
And he's kind of washed out from the flash from a camera. And then in the background, it almost looks like he's been photoshopped into a scene. But I think that's kind of what makes it more urban legend-y.
Yeah.
And people seem to think that he wasn't a real guy who actually lived, because it looks like it was photoshopped.
It does.
You know, it doesn't look real. Basically, if you grew up in Western Pennsylvania in the 1950s, you knew the legend of the Green Man. You also might have met him along the road, had a smoke and a beer with him, and learned that he was one of the nicest people in the world. Apparently, he was a pretty cool dude. Now, I know what you're thinking. Where does Mel Gibson fit into all of this?
How did you guess my exact thought? You are a psychic.
I am a psychic! I'll tell you. Around 2000, a chain letter began circulating about a particularly famous individual who had been severely beaten, his face disfigured like Ray Robinson's, and had skyrocketed to stardom. As chain letters go, it was pretty well written, and a lot of people fell for the content. It had supposedly been written by Paul Harvey, who was a radio commentator at the time, but nothing could have been further from the truth. Except this story/chain letter from Snopes.com. So I'm going to read it to you because guaranteed you got it in your email box at one point or another. It's a little long, but I think it's worth it.
Okay, I'm ready.
Here is the true story by Paul Harvey. Pass it to anyone who you think would find it interesting and inspiring. You will be surprised who this young man turned out to be. don't look at the bottom of this letter until you've read it fully. Because we don't want to ruin the surprise. That's for damn sure.
I feel like you already did, though. You told me it was Mel Gibson. Well,
I did. Okay. I did. But it's farcical. Okay. So, fine.
Oh, no, this is true. We got it off the internet. So it's true.
I mean, a lot of true stuff does come. No, it's not true.
The internet does not lie. Abraham Lincoln fought
vampires. Only on days ending in Y does the internet lie.
All right.
Yes. Years ago, a hardworking man took his family from New York State to Australia to take advantage of a work opportunity there. Part of this man's family was a handsome young son who had aspirations of joining the circus as a trapeze artist or an actor, one or the other.
Clearly, those are the only two choices.
I mean, those are the only... either you want to swing in a trapeze or you want to act.
Like,
and those are the only two things.
And nothing can compare.
Nothing.
No.
To you. Nothing. Okay, sorry. So, this young fellow, biding his time until a circus job, or even one as a stagehand, came along. Why do people think this is a real thing? Just don't get it. Worked at the local shipyards, which bordered the worst section of town. Of course he did.
Uh-huh.
Walking home from work one evening, this young man was attacked by five thugs who wanted to rob him. Instead of just giving up his money, the young fellow resisted. However, they bested him easily and proceeded to beat him to a pulp.
5-1, you're not gonna win that shit.
I know, those are bad odds. It's bad. They mashed his face with their boots, and they kicked and beat his body brutally with clubs, leaving him for dead.
Oh, shit.
When the police happened to find him lying in the road, they assumed he was dead and called for a morgue wagon. On the way to the morgue, a policeman heard him gasp for air and they immediately took him to the emergency unit at the hospital. When he was placed on a gurney, a nurse remarked to her horror that this young man no longer had a face.
Oh, shit.
Each eye socket was smashed, his skull, legs, and arms fractured, his nose literally hanging from his face, and all his teeth were gone.
Ow.
And his jaw was almost completely torn from his skull.
Fuck.
Although his life was spared, he spent over a year in the hospital.
Fair.
When he finally left, his body may have healed, but his face was disgusting to look at.
Don't pull any punches.
I mean, I guess be blunt. Just tell it like it is. This was written by, like, a 65-year-old woman who just got back from book group
Mildred.
And was like, Mildred, and was like, I'm going to write this story about a man whose face was disgusting to look at. It's a true story, damn it! Okay. He was no longer the handsome youth that everyone admired. See, 65-year-old.
Mildred.
When the young man started to look for work again, he was turned down by everyone, just on account of the way he looked.
Damn, rub it in!
One potential employer suggested to him that he join the freak show at the circus as the man who had no face. And he did this for a while.
That's so kind!
I mean, he was still rejected by everyone and no one wanted to be seen in his company. He had thoughts of suicide. This went on for 5 years. I mean, I needed a time frame, so I'm glad I have that.
Yes.
Now, that makes me feel better.
Yeah, well, okay. Now that just proves the, like, reality of the story we were given.
This true fucking story that we were given.
Mildred heard this right from him.
Right.
He told her. He told Mildred.
He did tell him. Yes. Or if he didn't tell Mildred, he told a friend of a friend of Mildred's.
Yeah.
And now she's relaying it to us.
Yes.
In the most comedic way possible. One day, he passed a church, and he sought solace there. Entering the church, he encountered a priest who had seen him sobbing while kneeling in a pew.
I guess they were kneeling in a pew. I was like, ew.
No. His life wasn't that bad. Jesus.
Kneeling in puke.
Oh, God. Yeah, in case you guys were wondering, this is a podcast run by 13-year-old boys.
And Mildred.
And Mildred, clearly. Because.
Okay. So he was kneeling in puke.
So he was kneeling in puke. And then the priest took pity on him and took him to the rectory where they talked at length. The priest was impressed with him to such a degree that he said that he would do everything possible for him that could be done to restore his dignity and his life.
Mm-hmm.
If the young man would promise to be the best Catholic he could be and trust in God's mercy to free him from his torturous life.
Fucking Mildred. It's not even being subtle about, like,
the... Dear Mildred. Suck it. The young man went to Mass and Communion every day, and after thanking God for his life, he asked God to only give him peace of mind and the grace to be the best man he could ever be, in capital H, his eyes. The priest, through his personal contacts, was able to secure the services of the best plastic surgeon in Australia.
This priest has a connection.
He's hooked up.
Yeah.
Hooked.
He's got a guy for everything.
He's got it on fucking lock.
Yeah.
This priest. There would be no cost to the young man, as the doctor was the priest's best friend.
Mm.
Hooked up.
Yeah.
Yes.
Dude, I'd fucking go to Mass every day.
I mean, if it meant, plastic surgery and, like, free shit, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't think I want plastic surgery.
I don't think I want plastic surgery, but free shit with you. Oh, maybe. Mm. Well, whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
The doctor, too, was so impressed by the young man, whose outlook now on life, even though he had experienced... he had experienced the worst... The worst. Was filled with good humor and also love.
Though he was disgusting to look at.
That doctor was like, I mean, he's such a great guy, but he's disgusting to look at. What the fuck? Oh my god. So, the surgery, of course, was a miraculous success. All of the best dental work was done for him. The young man became everything he promised God he would be. He was also blessed with a wonderful, beautiful wife and many children, and success in an industry which would have been the furthest thing from his mind as a career, if not for the goodness of God.
Mm-hmm.
And plastic surgery.
I was gonna say, I feel like something's missing from the sentence.
This he acknowledges publicly.
Tell me, who was
the... Well, you already know it was Mel Gibson! Oh, God! Okay, so it was Mel fucking Gibson! I can't even believe that people believe that this is real. Why?
Because Meltry can spin us a fine tale.
I can't. Oh my god. They say that his life was the inspiration for the movie The Man. The Man Without a Face. And of course, he's a God-fearing man,
mm-hmm.
a political conservative,
mm-hmm.
and an example as a true man of courage.
Mel fucking Gibson, you can tell this was written in the fucking 90s.
Period. Close quotation marks. Thank Christ.
Got there.
The young man was absolutely not Mel Gibson. Not even close. Not even close. If you get this in your email, not Mel Gibson. Not at all.
Don't listen to Mildred. She only tells lies.
Mildred only speaks lies. And untruths. Which are lies, I suppose. So. The only thing that's remotely accurate from the story is the fact that Mel Gibson's father did move the family from New York to Australia. That's it. The truth ends there. When Mel was about 12 years old. So,
It's honestly, it's just another interesting twist on the Green Man, Charlie No Face, Ray Robinson legend. And I've actually even seen photos of Ray Robinson accompany this fucking chain letter, just to add a touch of credibility to it. Jesus Christ. So, I have a question for all of you out there in podcast land. Do you think we're insane? Because we do. And also, if you have ever met the famous, infamous Ray Robinson.
Or Mel Gibson.
Or Mel Gibson. Did you ask him if he was the man without a face? Do you and your family members have stories about him or tales about your part of the country, about the Green Man or Charlie No Face legend? We want to hear about it.
We do.
We sure do.
We also want to know that good old Melly boy.
That is the man without a face.
The whole time I was thinking of, like, the horse with no name.
Been through the desert on a horse with no name.
Felt good to be out on the rain. In the desert. Okay. All right. Are we done for this week? We're done for this week.
I think we need food.
I feel like, knowing our fucking luck, this is going to be the most downloaded episode of Hauntheads ever.
Oh, God.
Okay. We are done for this week. We're going to go get food and get recharged, and we'll be back for our bi-weekly episode, obviously. As long as the world doesn't end.
And my pink ain't a hoe.
And your pink ain't a hoe. We should be good.
Yeah.
So, until next time.
And cool teddy bear.
And, as always, guys, stay spooky. Jesus Christ. Mel fucking Gibson.
You have to keep in.
And that man was Mel Gibson. I can't even say it.
And that man.
Yeah.
And that man St. James.